I missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFeng.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
And Delaney.
Hello.
And we'll be joined by Sam shortly. Today we'll be, now we're into our off-season podcasts, as per usual. We'll be doing forever off-season. We'll be doing... a permanent off-season. Sad. Very sad. We'll be doing various top five lists of Korra things. So I've asked everyone, quote-unquote everyone, because there's, two people here, plus Sam will make three, plus Teresa and Taidao have contributed lists. But everyone ranked their top five favorite characters. Now, okay, what's your favorite Korra character? So I think this actually has some amount of meaning, because it's interesting to see where we are in regards to sympathy and caring for the characters after book four has ended and the show has ended. So I think it's interesting to check in on that. And then I've asked everyone to come up with an amount of unique top five lists. I have the categories, but I do not know what the contents of their lists are. So we'll be just giving random things, for instance, top five fights, top five, lines or something like that, whatever anyone has for us to go over. Basically, for what lists we have in common, we're going to start with our character list. So I'm going to say, what's your five? Then we're going to go from five to one. I'm going to say, start with Mel, what's your five? Delaney, what's your five? What's my five? Et cetera, et cetera. You give what the item is, a short explanation, and that's it. Yeah. So we should try to keep each item on the list fairly brief because we have many, many lists to get through. So yeah, let's start with, top five favorite Korra characters. Let me tell you the exact phrasing I gave everyone in order, the criteria to rank this. Top five favorite characters, parentheses, care the most about. So
you suddenly made it difficult because I don't really care about it.
Right, so this isn't who has the best characterization. Number one is Korra, right? That's not what this is. I want variation here. So who do you have the most caring for and who's your favorite? That's the criteria to go by. So, okay, so let's go. We're going to go Mel, Delaney, me. Let's start with your number five, Mel.
My number five is Kaya.
All right, why Kaya?
Because I just love Kaya. I liked her character when they introduced her as the hippie, cool aunt. And I think she's rad.
Cool. Delaney, who was your five?
Keep it brief.
Yeah, that's true. That was brief. Good job. Who was your five, Delaney?
Sue.
Sue. Why Sue?
Well, because obviously I'm just obsessed with the Beifongs, but I don't like Sue really grew on me as a character, and I've just kind of fallen in love with her. So yeah, Sue.
Cool. My five is Asami. Starting off, yeah, I know only five, but at the same time, five is still high. Yeah, after book one, Asami was number two. I think Asami's arc during book one was the best arc in the entire show, which is why it's funny to see hate about her character now. Cause she was the best character in book one, not really close. Since then she's had less to do and she's kind of, fallen off a little bit, but obviously reinvigorated by the Korrasami scenes at the end. And I guess I have Teresa's five here too. Teresa has Bolin at five. I'm putting aside my rage at his complete wasted potential and going back to the good old days of book one when I shipped Amora to my heart's content and Bolin actually had some relevance to the plot. Then books two and three happened and we'll just ignore especially book two, but then book four came around and at least he was relevant again. My poor child, you deserve so much more. We could have had it all, Bolin in the deep. yes, exactly. We'll get another mention of that. And we'll save Taidao's for later, I guess. And Sam's when she gets on, too. Okay, what's your four, Mel?
Sorry. Four is Sue.
Sue, why Sue?
Because I actually ended up really liking Sue. I didn't like the idea of her when they first brought her in, because I was like, oh, of course they retconned the fact that Lin has a sister.
Yep,
of course that's what happened. But she ended up being really cool. I like that she's really one of those really awesome characters who's also making stupid decisions, because those are my favorite kinds.
Yeah, since this is the last time we'll have Sue on any of our lists. Spoilers, not on my list. I thought Sue was really, really well done. Yeah, I mean, through book three, it was kind of, oh, is Sue evil? That was kind of like hampering our love of Sue the entire time, because it really seemed like...
Well, I mean, we did the same thing with Asami in book one, though.
Yeah. But looking back, I mean, Sue's just been really cool. Yeah. Delaney, who's your four?
Janora.
Okay, why Janora?
I mean, I love Janora. She's great. I've always loved her character. She's moved down my list simply because she just... I mean, I kind of feel bad about it because, like, I was just thinking about, oh, don't move her down the list just because, but, I mean, I like her, but I've come to... It's not that I've, like, my like of her has lessened. It's just my love of other characters has increased.
Oh, sure it has.
So, but no, Janora's great. I love
Spoilers,
her.
Spoilers, we'll be seeing Janora again.
Of course.
Spoilers. My four is Ikki.
Really?
So... Ikki during book one was like maybe my number two or three or something. She wasn't in book one a lot, but she was great. She's so lovable. I love how energetic she was. And then she didn't really appear for two books. In book two, of course, we have the incredible bison tea party scene, which is one of the best. That's like the highlight of early book two. that is it. The one highlight. And then she came back in episode four of the season and was incredible. I love how her character's kind of, toned it down. It's like matured a little bit, but yet she still maintains her personality. Her design is incredible. She's so cute now with her new hairstyle and stuff. And I have a lot of sympathy for Ikki, and I love Ikki. Teresa's number four is Tenzin. Teresa says, "You're all going to hate me for this, but
I don't hate it. I'm going to be honest. I flirted with the idea of putting him
was,
on my list. For
yeah,
a
he
second,
was almost on
was
my
like,
list.
Actually, no. I've been waiting for you to die for like three seasons. So.
Teresa says, "You're going to hate me for this, but it's just another one of my ploys to gain more power." Terrible lines aside, Tenzin around the book three finale destroyed me. I cared about him a lot, especially when I thought Break would actually go there and kill him off, and I'm crying. Does Tenzin appear on either of your lists? No. Neither.
He almost did.
So here's all I'll say about Tenzin. I feel like his character is the most wasted potential out of any character on the show. Like, he's Aang's son. He's the carrying on the legacy of the Airbenders. He should be more interesting and more sympathetic. But really, other than book three, I don't think he's interesting at all. At least in my
opinion. I still love him, though.
In book three, they did a lot of interesting things with him, though. Like the one scene in the premiere episode with him and the kids talking about the new Airbenders coming on, then him in the ultimatum. Those were two big Tenzin moments.
Yeah. I think his scene with Zaheer and the I guess that was the ultimatum, where he's like, as long as I'm breathing, it's not over. Then again, that's interesting because it's his devotion to Korra, not really anything he inherently has as a kid.
I think Tenzin is very defined by his mentorship towards Korra.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's, I don't know if there's that much to his character. Mel, who's your number three?
My number three is actually Kuvira.
Why Kuvira?
Because she's the Bay.
She's the Bay.
She's all, I mean, it's funny because when everyone was talking about midseason, they're like, oh, she's like the best villain. I was like, I'm not really feeling it, but she's like a pretty nifty character, I think. Even
nifty.
Even, you know, at the end, like, we got a lot of information dumped on us in the end about her, but a lot of it was stuff we could already infer. I'll put it this way with, like, what Sue said when Potara was like, why'd you try to kill me? Like, she's a complicated person, and I like that about her.
And you like that about her.
And sure, her eyebrow game is so strong.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah, but by that criteria, shouldn't Mako be on your list?
No, that's all he has.
That's his one positive? Okay.
That's one person who never even came close to getting on this
Mako
list.
Mako wouldn't even be on the worst character list.
Bolin almost was on here. Mako, I didn't even... Who's Mako?
Who is Mako? Delaney, who's your three?
Well, spoilers, Kuvira will return.
Spoilers,
My number three is Asami.
What is wrong with you people?
No, listen. No, there's... Well, we all know who my number one is. Like, don't even act like you don't know who my number one is.
Well, why Asami now?
Yeah, well, there's still number two spot.
Well, you'll be shocked for number two. But I love Asami. Asami's great. Like, she's just, and I hated her in book one because I was a really sad, messed up, inside 16-year-old Korra shipper that just needed guidance. And then after I like started listening to the podcast and then book two, I was like, Asami's the best character, and I just still love her. Like,
book three, Asami is like my favorite thing. Like, Asami's just amazing, and I love her, and I aspire to be Asami.
I think we all aspire to be Asami.
So yeah, Asami number three, solid number three. It's really hard ranking my top three because, like, I love them so much. It's just all so close together.
Yeah, to me, I actually have a clear top five. Like, the top five I have are just
they're all in and out of.
Like, I kind of care about five characters on the show, and then don't really care about anyone else. That's kind of I don't know. That's kind of harsh. But anyway, my three is Korra. Korra, during book one, would have been on my top five least favorite characters, so her she's definitely came around.
Dylan did not like Korra.
I did not like Korra. I mean, I think that's kind of the point, too. But no, she's been extremely sympathetic. I mean, even after book three, she would have been maybe in the five slot, but the end of book three and then her arc this season was just extremely sympathetic to me. Also, she's incredibly attractive with short hair, so, you know, that bumps her up, too. So, Korra, number three. I mean, I think she's the best character on the show, the best character arc, but I have two characters who I are in love with more than Korra. I'll say that. Teresa, at three, also has Asami. Teresa says she's pretty flawless, and her shenanigans with Korra specifically in book three are really enjoyable. She's very well written, wonderfully voice acted, and I love her character arc. She's great.
This is what there Teresa and I are sisters.
Our sisters, yes. Podcast baby sisters.
Yes.
Twin baby sisters.
Yeah, we're podcast twins.
Okay. Mel, who is your number two?
My number two is Korra.
Why Korra?
Which surprised me, because I wasn't even sure she was going to make the list. But
yep, same.
I surprisingly care. Which is, I think, is something I said in chat when we were talking about this. I was like, do I care enough about Korra? But, I mean, yeah, I do at this point. I think she, especially after what happened in book three and how that ended, I think she, as you said, is an incredibly sympathetic character now that, you know, I'm just like, you. Go succeed. Go be you.
go do you. Yeah, there you go. Delaney, who is your number two and why is it Kuvira?
Well, actually, but it's a tie between Korra and Kuvira.
No. This is a top six list.
You
made a top six list.
Too bad.
You can't
too
do
bad.
That.
No, it's a tie. It's a tie.
Okay, why each of them?
Well, Korra won. Like, I absolutely hated her in book one, and I was like, no. And then book two, I was like, whatever. I actually laughed when she lost her memory. Like, I cackle at that part, because one, I just don't care, and it's hilarious.
Never forget.
Who is Korra?
But like Mel, in book three, I realized I actually cared about Korra, and book four, like, in the finale, I was like, I'm crying, and obviously I care about Korra, and like, I've just fallen in love with her character, and I think she's wonderful. And she's just grown on me, which I just had to put it. But I'm shocked that I put her on number two, because I really didn't almost put her on the list. And then Kuvira, bae. Kuvira's just the bae. All the reasons, Mel, that's the reason I love Kuvira. Kuvira's just amazing.
Yeah, so we'll mark Delaney down as having cheated on a top five list. Okay, noted.
Dylan, you have a top 10 list.
That's Don't not this it. List, though.
Dylan has like 50 lists and two of them top 10.
So I'm not going
to
take
We'll see which ones we get to. Number two is, for me, is Opal. Opal is the person who I'm in love with most on the show, just in terms of everything.
She
is just incredibly sympathetic. I absolutely loved her during book three. Like, her introduction is one of the best character introductions in show history, either show. She's just the nice girl, but not taking any of Bolin's crap. Like, it's wonderful. And then she just remains sympathetic while still, you know, learning, being an airbender stuff. And where they go with her in book four is even better. Like, I love Angry Opal. It's incredible. She's still
almost
as cute and almost Sith Opal. Even though we didn't go Sith Opal, like, her character didn't go in as interesting of a place as we thought it would be. It's still, where they went with her was great on its own. Like, we still will always have the Opal blowing up a Bolin scene in episode 9.
We'll always have that.
So you can't take that away from me.
We'll always have Kale and Angry Opal.
Kale and Angry Opal, there you go. So yeah, I don't know.
Bring me my kale shake.
Yeah, just incredibly in love with Opal. Like, just to a very large extent. Teresa's number two is Varric. Every single thing that comes out of this man's mouth is a gift to my entire existence, and Zurich, five ever, just saying. So actually, Varric would have been my six if I was going to extend the list.
I considered it.
Yeah, I don't think he's close to my top five. But if there's, like, these are my five, and then if there was going to be someone else who I'd put on here, it would be Varric. I also think he's the most sympathetic male character on the show, which is interesting because
everyone the least angry.
Which is interesting because he started out incredibly sexist, and it's still sexist by the end, but it is funny. Not his sexism, but he is funny. There you go. Mel, who is your number one?
Asami.
Why Asami?
Because she's stellar. I mean, here's the... I mean, I just... It was funny because in book one, I didn't think of her as a great of a character as everyone else did, which is interesting because that is when she had her own arc and her own biggest thing to do. It was like, oh, she's good, you know, not great. Book two, she like wasn't even there for half the season. And I liked all her interactions with Cor in book three. She didn't really have a lot to do besides being sort of like the whiz kid. But I think that, you know, her stuff with Hiroshi was awesome. All of her stuff with Hiroshi over the season was awesome. I love the way they organically grew her to be this sort of like engineer mechanic person, because she certainly didn't start out that way. And I just like where her character ended up at the end of the series. Also, she pretty. And I want her hair.
She pretty.
She there pretty. Was it so pretty to smell?
So pretty to smell. So pretty. She probably would be. Not that we would know. Delaine, who is your number one?
I mean, I'm sure you have a guess.
Lynn.
Yes, Lynn is the best. I've loved her since day one, episode one. Lynn is my favorite thing on the face of the earth. She's so great, and like, it's not even just because Toph was my favorite character in Avatar. Like, Lynn is just. She's sarcastic. She's also gorgeous. Like, I don't care if she's 50. I date Lynn. Like, jeez. And the trench coat, oh man. But it's like, and she really grew as a character. Like, I mean, we see she does have a character arc, and like, and especially in all, book three is just like Beifongs, and then book four, Beifongs. And it's great, like, just seeing the family interaction, like how Lynn developed, and seeing her relationships with her family. Just great. Stellar. Lynn is amazing.
There you go. My number one is Jenora, no surprise. Jenora is also one of my top five most sympathetic characters in any media ever. Right up there with Aang, I would say. So I don't know. I'm going to pull up my post from 6 months ago as to why I love Jenora so much, because I think I explain it better there. So five reasons. One, her character archetype. The kind of smart young female. Also, personally, I'm much more sympathetic to young females than other age or gender characters than any other. Shows too. She's adorable, and her character model has evolved really well. This was even before I wrote this. This was even before the updated models for book four, and I think she had the best update out of any character for the 3 years later.
Mostly people just changed hair.
Yeah, she changed hair, and you know, like, is also noticeably older too. Number three, she's Aang's granddaughter. And looks very similar to him. And Aang is / was probably my favorite character ever. Yeah, and Jenora's up there now too. Number four is Kiernan Shipka, her voice actress, who like me and many others have watched grow up on Mad Men, and I'm extremely sympathetic to her. She's incredible on Mad Men, and now she did a voice in Korra, and that was incredibly exciting to me. And her character ended up being my favorite. It's all wonderful. And number five, her actions and attitudes are like unrelatable. Yeah, so just literally everything about Jenora is the best. There you go. And I don't think I need. It's probably pretty obvious, even though she wasn't in book four. And this is also should make it obvious that this is not a best characters list, because although Jenora was one of the best side characters, perhaps the best through book three, her not doing anything in book four definitely makes her fall off there.
Also, just shaking her head to Mako in the finale. Yeah.
I mean, I
hate stuff. I'm sorry, I hate stuff like that. It's just so obvious that either like there was something where like either the voice actor didn't want to come in, they didn't want to bother giving the voice actor a line, blah blah blah. Like, I hate stuff like that.
I mean, it's better than nothing, I guess.
It happened to Asami in book two when Cor was like, hey Asami, can you go take my dad back to whatever, and she just literally goes mm-hmm and runs off, and we don't see her until the very end of the episode, and that was the finale. So
it's interesting because they did that with Jenora, but then they didn't have her and Kai dance at the end, so it's weird.
Yeah, no,
I don't those are kind of contradictory anyway.
Yeah.
Teresa's number one is Cora. I don't think I need to back myself up on this. There are a few times throughout the series I dislike Cora's actions, decisions, or whatever, but I never dislike Cora herself. She's just an extremely well-written, well-thought-out, relatable, not that cliche character, and I love her, and I just wow. I just wow, indeed.
I just wow.
Teresa. Okay, so that's pretty good. We had four different number ones, and I'm sure, I don't know who Sam's number one will be. Oh, so no. I'll do Sam.
You evaluate your Asami situations.
I mean, I have a Asami.
Asami's too good for this world.
Asami is too good for this world. I agree.
Asami is, of course, wonderful and literally perfect. Like, I think Asami might be the most perfect person in all of media.
For sure.
In all of any character ever. Perfect. Seriously, though.
In a list that comes out in a few
like,
years.
If I had to say
the most perfect characters in all of media.
If I had to think of, like, who the most, like, gorgeous character design for any character, right? Asami would jump to mind more than anyone else, I would say.
Definitely.
I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, she's designed to be beautiful, right, by Brian. I also think that's Brian's...
Yeah, that was, like, part of her character, too, in the first one, because Cora was like, oh, that prissy, yeah, elegant, beautiful, rich girl. And then she's like, nah, I drive cars and stuff,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, exactly. It's really pretty awesome. Okay, so let's get into...
How things change.
she's well.
Oh, you don't
now.
Even know Cora in book one, yeah. So let's get into some of our specific lists. Let's do me and Mel's top five fight scenes first, so we can do... So any shared lists any of us have, we can just do a similar back and forth from 5 to 1. Okay. So let's me and Mel pull up this, and then Dwayne, you can comment where appropriate.
It's on a different.
So I also, my big list is my top 10 non-action scenes, but top 10 scenes in general, but I've ranked the fight ones separately. So I'll start off with an honorable mention here, which is Sue versus Kuvira in episode 10 of book 4.
Yes.
The reason this didn't make, like, so the one, like, the 5 to 10 seconds of Sue taking the metal off the side thing, blocking, spinning it to block Kuvira's, whatever those are, and then attaching it to herself as armor is probably the coolest 5 seconds in the entire show. But I don't think the rest of the fight is, like, quite up to... top 5 status, you know. Up to snuff. But still, like, that is definitely worth mentioning.
I have my list.
Do you have any honorable mentions, or should we jump right in?
No, not really.
All right. What is your number 5?
My number 5 is Kaya versus Zaheer. Actually, that's a lie. I do have an honorable mention. It's Kaya versus Minghua.
Minghua and the Ultimate.
Anyway, number 5 is Kaya versus Zaheer at the Air Temple.
Yeah, storyboarded by Will Ruzicka. What did you love about this fight?
I just thought it was, I mean, it's really the only time we got to see Kaya in action. And I think it was awesome when we did finally get to see her in action, because I just love waterbending fighting. I think it's so cool because it's so just graceful and they zoom all over the place most of the time. And I love the movements, and I thought it was just amazing. Plus, we never really get to see airbending versus anything else. Like, in that regard, like, yeah, we saw it with Aang and stuff, but in Korra, we didn't get to see much airbending versus other things. Yeah. So I really liked that this was a full on like air versus water fight, which is something I don't think we've seen before either.
Yeah. It's usually air and water working together in Avatar.
Yeah. So it was interesting to see that.
Yeah. My number 5 is, the Chi Blocker fight scene in the Revelation episode 3 of season 1. I've talked about this maybe more than any other scene in Gora, so on the podcast, so I'll lay off it a little bit, but basically it's just the most creative fight scene in the show and remains throughout the entire series. And I really appreciated that. It was the highlight of this episode, one of the best scenes of that season. And I just think it's really great. Mel, what's your 4?
4 is Sue versus Kuvira.
Yes.
Which, again, I just thought it was so cool, the use of metal and how fast-paced it was.
It was very fast-paced.
I love when you've got these scenes when you got two people going against each other who really, really know what they're doing against each other. Like, I love when two people are pitted against each other, like essentially equal matches. I also love when you know that there's history there. Like, I love seeing like Anakin versus Obi-Wan, like, stuff like that. I love fight scenes where you've got characters who were friends once who are now like duking it out.
Yeah, cool.
The reasons to love it.
I have 4. I have Korra versus Zaheer in the book 3 finale.
The one at the end.
The one in the last episode, specifically the long sequence of one shot of Korra pursuing Zaheer opposite.
Very
I don't even remember.
Shot.
Extreme. Yes. Yeah. Storyboarded by Joaquin. It's probably the best shot of the entire show, I think. Like, it's just the most beautifully storyboarded, animated. Like, it's very special. It's probably, I think I said this at the time, but it's probably the best sequence in American animation history. This one, long sequence of Korra here in the book 3 finale. I personally, like, wasn't necessarily as emotionally invested in this entire long fight sequence, and I didn't necessarily think it was as interesting as some other things on here, but like this, it's impossible to ignore this one aspect of it for sure. What is your three, Mel?
My three is Tonrak and Korra versus Zaheer.
In Enter the Void.
Yes, Enter the Void. Because I love when elements work together, and I love seeing two fighters working together in situations like that. Again, this goes back to Star Wars just because it has beautifully choreographed fights, but I loved situations where you've got two versus one in terms of like lightsaber duels, because it's just so cool to see how they choreograph these people working together. And I also love the fact that it was extremely creative with the way that Korra was chained up and still getting hits in on Zaheer, getting back up and all that stuff.
They actually talked about that on the commentary for that episode. It was they said the fight sequence was really interesting to them because of the constraint that they had with Korra fighting. I think I don't have this one on my list, but this is certainly one of the better ones in the show.
That one always, like, I've rewatched because I've been, you know, I have my cult of people watching Korra, and like that scene just every time is just so cool.
Just no context for that scene.
No, I have a cult. I have listeners. A cult because I've converted everyone to Korra.
Yeah, because she starts out the fight by herself, I believe. Yeah, fighting, you see her so chained up, and then Tonrak.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was so like good. The coolest thing ever. I was like, she's actually gonna try and fight this dude chained up. Like, they're actually gonna do that, and it worked out.
It's
so
insane.
Great.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't work out great for Korra, but as a viewer, it worked out fantastic.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, and on the commentary, by the way, Brian said that the idea behind Tonrak entering the fight later is that it took him longer than the Metalbenders to get up the mountain. So they didn't really show that in the show, but yeah.
He's
also huge, yeah.
Yeah, because he's huge.
Yeah. My number three is Kaya versus Zaheer, as discussed by Mel. This is, I think, the most well-executed what it should have been given the context. This is the best fight scene in the show because there's no reason that this fight scene should be this good. this is two characters who we barely know any backstory between. We don't really care about Kaya that much at all. Zaheer, we haven't seen that much, and we don't really care about him. And it just starts very abruptly. But what it ends up being is the tone is perfect. It's incredibly creepy. It starts in Tenzin's office and reciting the poem. It's wonderful, and then it's just incredibly fast paced, well executed. I think it's a perfect scene. Again, Will Ruzicka boarded this, like, it's completely wonderful. Like, I don't know. This is the most impressive one to me because it shouldn't have been as good as it was, but it was just incredible. And is a reason why The Metal Clan is one of the best episodes ever. What's your number two, Mel?
My number two is the first fight scene between Kuvira and Korra. Because I just love the way that Kuvira was using those metal bands that she was ripping off her arms, like, because I rewatched.
Battle of Zaufu.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that's the first one. Because I watched it again earlier today, and the way she's like tossing these things and at Korra, and she'd like drag her by her ankle when she had one around her ankle, or drag her by her arm, or flip her around. And I particularly love the one where Korra was about to do, you know, that thing where people put their hands behind their back and like pop up into the air. That, like, essentially every dancer or fighter knows how to do. And Korra was getting up, and Kuvira just whammed her with, I can't remember if it was a piece of metal or a piece of rock, and just knocked her right back down. And I just thought it was so crazy, because I've never seen a fight like that before, where it was so ridiculously physical for a bending fight, because she was basically manhandling Korra without touching her. And I thought that was awesome. Also, reappearance of Miss Dark Avatar Korra.
Yeah, I think that's another notable one. That one's not on my top five, but I think that's another very notable fight
sequence.
Like,
when she flips her, I just freak out every time. Like, the way she moves, Kuvira moves her arms and then, like, flips Korra. Like, it's like, what?
It was just so, and it was so interesting for Kuvira's character, too. Like, at that point, we already knew, like, yeah, like, she's great. Like, we saw her beat those dudes up, but here, like, she's literally exerting minimal effort and tossing Korra around the battlefield. Like, it was
And we'd
insane.
Only seen metal bending with cables, and to see, like, the true extent of what metal bending can do.
Yeah.
For me, that's this scene is most notable because this is Korra fighting with Opal and Jinora in the background. So my three favorite characters. I don't know.
They eventually intervene.
They do eventually intervene. That aspect is very interesting. Like Kuvira forcing their hands by going for the kill with Korra. That was your two, right?
Yeah.
My number two is Korra versus Kuvira in the finale. Within the control room of the Colossus, we talked about this on our 6 hours of finale coverage, but it was excellent. There's the notable things are Kuvira using what we now know as the liquid from the meteorites, I think, that she had within the Colossus control room head. We don't think we said that on the podcast, but people corrected us later. That's the
Because
they're Sue's meteorites, apparently, from her.
But
from
I thought she was dismantling the domes.
I don't know. It's confusing, but apparently that's what
dismantle the domes and then whisper, steal the meteorites.
Steal the meteorites. Yeah. So just the visual of that, of them clashing at each other. I don't even remember other things from the, my focus on the finale has been solely on the last scene recently, but
was that not a fight?
I hope that's not your number one, because that does not count as a fight scene, but yeah.
It's a different kind of fight scene.
There was bodily contact.
There was, true. But yeah, no, I just think this sequence is wonderful. I love how it's in a constrained environment and they use the environment against each other. And it's just very excellent. Mel, what is your number one?
That actually is my number one. Yeah. And for a lot of the same reasons, I love that it was an enclosed environment. I love the way it started with just the bang, bang, bang on the manhole, and then it pops into the air and Cora busts in the room. And they just go at it, like, nonstop. It's fast. It's constrained, and that's awesome, because they're being tossed around this control room. They're using everything around them that they can. It's great, and I love that slow-mo shot where they're going at each other, and they just both toss. She tosses that metal at Cora, and Cora blasts her down with the air. I just think it's stellar.
Yeah, I also said this, I think, on one of the finale podcasts. I love that this is a location that we've, like, been seeing. And then we actually get a fight scene in there. Like, compare this to Aang and Ozai randomly fighting on a bunch of pillars of rocks in the finale, and the same with Korra and Zaheer, just random rocks. Here, this is a location we'd seen Kuvira in for, like, two episodes
It thematically made a lot of sense, because Kuvira, had been in that thing two episodes in a row now. Of course, Korra would have to find her way into the control room, because Kuvira was not stepping outside
She was at her strongest position there, and it was up to Korra to dismantle her. Yes, I just nifty. Really liked it.
Nifty. And there's hand-to-hand combat, which is, like, my favorite thing ever.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, she, like, does the fine neck thing.
Yeah, she like, just
where she tosses Kuvira across the room with her so legs. She did the Black Widow move.
The Black Widow move, yeah.
So good.
All right, my number one is kind of questionable, but it is the fight sequence in the Terror Within episode 8 of book 3. So this starts when the Red Lotus capture Cora in Zaufu, and then they have a standoff. Gazan bends a pool of lava around them, and like it's basically like a standoff between them. Sue and Lin have to go in from the top. Olin has to try to hit Pili in the eye, the third eye. Yeah, so to me, I think this is the best fight sequence in the show because of how interesting it is to me. Like, I'm not always into the random action sequences with no meaning behind them. Like, I don't know, just in episode one of book 4, them trying to get the supplies that Kai and Opal are carrying. Like, actually, even though that was well done, like, these type of action sequences are maybe somewhat boring compared to the more plot points of the show, but what I love about this one is how much thought is going into this fight sequence. Also, the scenario, and this is part of it, is just so interesting. Like, Gazan creating this impenetrable thing around them and them standing in the middle. To me, it's just the most interesting fight sequence scenario I've maybe seen in any show, and it completely catapulted that episode into one of the best ones of season 3, even though we get Mako being a dumb detective in the second half. Like, this is in the first half, and it's just really excellent. Everyone does something. You see Lin and Sue being awesome together, and Zaheer.
Cora's booty makes an appearance.
Many appearances, yeah. So yeah, that is my number one. And I think that it's definitely one of the most notable ones. I could see Cora and Kuvira being, and Cora and Zaheer being better than it. I don't know. That would be it for me, though.
Oh, yeah. That one's really memorable. Like, when I think about book 3, that's one of, like, the first things I just immediately think of is that fight scene, because you're just so incredible.
Which one?
Yeah. The
one we're just talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you mentioned, like, two others at the end. You were like, oh, yeah, besides the core.
Well, it was all one thing, you know?
When everyone came out in tank, like, t-shirts and tank tops. And
yes, and Asami's in pajamas, too. There you go. That's the most notable thing.
Asami book 3 pajamas. Pillow fight, that's what happened.
We are now joined by Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hey, yes. I just got off work. Hey. How are you guys?
Good. Hope work was well. So we're going to move on to a different list now. So let's do one of Delaney's, then one of Sam's. Delaney, let's do your top five oh crud moments. I think this is a good one. So explain to me this concept.
Okay, so top five oh crud, I mean, has been amended for consumption of our audience. But so top five oh crud moments are like, they're based on my personal reactions. And of course, I mean, I know, you know, as a member of the fandom, like, there are people who, like, had the same, like, reactions of, like, oh my god, that just happened, and just shock, and just whoa, and not necessarily, like, just shock, or not necessarily just sadness, but just, like, wow, that happened.
Just so, like, the top five wow moments is another way to phrase it. Okay.
Just, like, whoa, like, you go, oh, crud. So, okay.
What is the number five?
Crud.
yes, oh, crud.
That's what we said.
Yes, exactly. So my number five, now this one's kind of a little iffy. I could see a lot of people being like, but for me, the explosion in Zhaofu when they're running after Aiwei and the bomb goes off, like, oh, that scene messed me up.
No, I can see, like, I think this has got to be on the list, right? This is one of this is one of the most notably shocking moments in Korra. Like, you definitely don't expect it just a bomb to randomly go off.
And then, like, the way, and then the shot of their eyes, just, whoa.
Yeah, the zoom in on Korra. Like, all the things I thought were behind that door, a bomb was not one of
them. Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't even process that there could be a bomb. And just the way it was shot was just, oh my god.
Yeah, I thought it was beautifully done, too. Yeah. All right, what's number four?
Peely's death.
Peely's death. So them bending the thing.
Like, it was just...
bending the thing.
And it wasn't very long, but just, whoa, that happened. She just blew herself up. Wow.
Did not expect that to happen in the middle of the fight. Yeah.
Top five oops moments.
Yeah, that's rude. Okay. What is three?
Okay, because you yelled at me earlier, so I guess it's top six. I don't know. This is a tie. No, listen, I had to do this one because I really didn't know, like, where to put it. But so three, when Kuvira fires at Batar, like, obviously we were expecting it. Like, so this is why there's an amendment to the side of it, because this one's like, we were kind of expecting it to happen, but still it was like, she just fired at Batar. Like, wow.
No, I think that was definitely one of the more shocking moments of the show. Yeah.
And then the more shocking is, but I don't know, I just couldn't figure out, like, where to move it. Kuvira, when, with the gun at Korra, where you moved to that scene, and then Korra's staring down the barrel of the gun.
I've never gasped so hard in my life.
I can't believe that happened. And it was just, it was ridiculous, but then just shocking. Like, I can't, like, what? She just rigged the gun up, and just the way that was shot was insane.
Yeah, that was definitely one. Okay, what is your two?
Throwback to when, it's book one finale, and... Tarlok's like, bye, and then the book blows up. It's like, what?
Yeah, so the murder-suicide scene.
Yeah, like...
That no one is talking about.
Gotta be hard for something to top this, but this is, like, this is the quintessential, like, holy crap moment. This defined the book one finale of Korra, and is one of the most notable scenes of the show, even now.
Yep.
What does top it, though? What is number one?
The reveal of Korra in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. For me.
Yeah.
Just, what? Like, I mean, it wasn't even, you know, in a comparison to most of these, which involve explosions, just, it wasn't...
didn't go off it?
No, I mean, but you know what, like, in comparison to how those were shot and how quick they were, the reveal of Korra wasn't sudden or, well, it was sudden, but you know what I mean? It wasn't the way, it was just the reveal, and you're just like, what?
Yeah.
And crying and feels.
Because I guess it was on the commentary you said, Dylan, that Jeremy Zuckerman didn't want music.
He definitely didn't want music over
in that
first
scene,
part
and
of,
I think that helps that a lot, because it's literally just, it's not like a ping of music when you see the wheelchair. It's like, oh.
Yeah, like, this is compared to the rest of these, this is maybe more of a drawn out, like, oh crud moment, right? This is, like, the entire time culminating with the tear at the end. It's like, wow, Korra is in this state.
I think
you've got it right. I think those are the two big ones for the show, the murder-suicide and then the end of the book three finale. I probably would reverse them, but I think those are definitely the two big ones.
And this is they were my personal oh crud moments.
Yes. No, I think you kind of nailed them in the show, though. And looking back, those are six, you know, because there's no ties. Those are six pretty pretty interesting moments. Yeah, like, there's that's a lot of...
No, I will say there are no other ties.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Yes, so there were, looking back, a lot of these, like, kind of shocking moments in the show. Maybe one of the better things
they
did
in planning.
This could
be a top 10, definitely. Like, I really struggled to narrow some of these down.
Interesting. All right. Let's do one of Sam's. Let me look at which do you think is the best of yours, Sam?
Just pick one.
Okay, let's do top five hottest makeout sessions. There you go.
Top five.
There's five.
No, I had to stretch.
Okay, what is five? What is number five, Sam?
Number five. I literally wrote down because I was at work. I don't know if Wolin and Opal ever kissed, but if they did, that's number five.
Did they?
No, they didn't. I think she kissed him on the cheek like once.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. That counts. Out of the polar bear doghouse and on to number five in this list. Okay, what is four?
Number four, it is Plea and Zaheer that one time.
Yes, there you go. The thing. Yes, in Enter the Void, yeah.
Yeah, so whatever. Number
three.
Number three, Kai and Jinora, because they kissed on their cheek that one time. It's canon. There you go. They're doing just fine.
That is definitely a makeout session. They have the kiss on the cheek in 304. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Number two, Julie and Varric. They did the thing.
They did the thing, indeed.
And number one, Cora and
Silence.
You know I'm just kidding.
In the book one finale, yeah, that's a contender. Okay, no.
They just love each other so much.
Okay, that's the number one. I'll accept that then.
No, it's not.
Oh, it wasn't.
Okay. This was a joke list, in case you couldn't tell.
Okay, what is number one then?
Nobody makes out. Anyway.
Huh. I mean, they kind of do.
Yeah,
you gave some examples. Is that the number one or is that not the number one? I'm confused.
Yeah, it is number. It's the only one I can think of.
I mean, that was the most notable
actually,
one.
Akko actually make out in like.
Yeah, they do whatever. Too in the sting. Yeah,
no,
that's
no,
another one.
Their apartment in their apartment, in Mako's apartment.
Oh, and was yeah. that no? That's they do twice. Oh man.
Yeah. No. What saw me kiss a
what
lot.
Even
it's
was
upsetting.
Book two? Okay. Yeah.
Ooh, they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if Bolin and Cora ever did, then that would be number one. But like. Mako's the next best thing.
What about the one that happened in the spirit world between Cora and Asami after
yeah, that one.
The finale?
I mean, that's implied. I don't know. That wasn't like a that doesn't happen.
I mean, it happens in all of our minds.
It
okay.
doesn't happen on the screen. It's very very. But then again, Bullet and Opal.
Yeah, that doesn't really.
Very,
on
very
the
tough
screen,
decision.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do my
the hand make out that Cora and Asami. Their hands were like going at it, you know.
Hashtag hand make out. There you go. Yeah. Talk about it on the Twitter. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Here's my top 10 non-action scenes of the entire series.
They're all going to be dinner.
I made I made this a top 10 list because there's. I mean, this is like
you
this
put
is the,
every single dinner scene.
This is the one.
Dinner.
This is there's the so many contenders for this. Anyway, I think this is the most
dinner contenders.
I think this is the most interesting or important one I made. I don't know. There's obviously tons of contenders here. I didn't specifically, when I made this, not put action sequences on, but it kind of worked out that way. Although I think I probably would put the Terror Within fight on here if it was including action sequences. Okay, number 10. Number 10 is the most, you know, questionable / minor scene, but it's one that's completely gorgeous to me, which is Opal and Korra airbending in 305, the Metal Clan.
I agree. That was
I'm surprised that's 10 for you.
I
would have been higher.
There's so many good ones. Like it's very tough to like it barely made the list. It's not very long, but it's great moments for both their characters, and it's just beautifully animated.
Gokdalin shipping
Corporal.
Wow, that's a good one. Corporal.
That's like one of the best ship names, right?
Like, it is.
I think that's a pretty cool ship. I want to read a thing about that.
Can we get a fanfics of drama between? Like Cora and Opal intervening.
There was
on Cora
a good
Asami.
Fic, not like forever ago, that had like Asami being jealous of Opal when they first met.
Oh yeah,
like when Cora and Opal like did their airbending thing, Asami was like, "Nope," and like busted in there. It was like, "We got stuff to do."
Stuff
it was
to do.
Great.
Yes. Yeah. My number 9 is also in the Metal Clan, episode 305, is the dinner scene.
Oh, there it is.
So this is a 5-minute sequence, actually. It's like very long. It's a very long continuous shot shifting between conversations at Sue's dinner table. It's the second best dinner scene at Sue's dinner table, but we talk about Sue's politics. Ugh, I hate her. Don't you agree, Cora? Right, we get that from Sue. That was a very important expositional. Like, actually, that kind of hinges on all of books 3 and 4. Sue saying that, she hates the Earth Queen. Right? That's so vital. We have Varric coming in with magnets, and Asami reacting to that, and then we have Bullen and Opal just being adorable, and Bullen's like, "Ah, here's all my life experiences. Aren't I so great?" So yeah, those are the things we get from that dinner scene in 305. And they're actually eating dinner in this dinner scene, unlike other dinner scenes.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Ooh. Number 8 for me is Jenora in the spirit world in New Spiritual Age, episode 210. So to me, so this is Jenora interacting with Furryfoot when she's like separated from Korra on her own. I've talked about this extensively, emotions displayed, Jenora's best solo scene, and then she goes to Wan Shitong's library. You can also include her interacting with Wan Shitong in this. Kind of all in one. Favorite Jenora moments. Number 7 is Opal's blow up in episode 409 to Bullen. What is that episode even called? The Beyond the Wilds.
No, it's called Opal's Blow Up.
Opal's Blow Up, the episode. Just her getting angry at Bullen because we're so in love. This is just, I did not expect this. Because
we're so in love.
So, it was no, so wonderful. It's the best it's the best Opal moment. It's just the funniest, most interesting character moment. Like it's so great. Number 6 is the dinner scene in The Terror Within. So this is the second dinner scene we get at Sue's table. So you kind of, I think, like I went back and rewatched the scene. You forget how many incredible, this is about 2 minutes and there's so many incredible things. First of all, we have, we'll always have Kale between Bullen and Opal. Ugh. We'll remember Kale's forever. Gross. Then we have what I think I'm going to look back on as my favorite joke from the entire show, which is the Varric's Airbender Finder. And look back on this with a Korrasami lens. Korra's look at Asami when Asami's pointed at her. It's great. And then Asami's like, I don't think it works. Well, no, that's another thing. Yeah,
like, I can't hear anything that's
we have Mako in the corner, upset at not being there, which is great. Then we have, also in this, we have Varric saying, kid, can I give you some relationship advice to Bull? And he's like, no. And then, well, you're lost. And he's like, well, you're lost. And then just completely moves on from that, which is a great comedy beat. Like, they don't expand upon that at all. And we also have Wei and Wing being sad at Opal leaving, because that's Opal's farewell dinner. And that's really adorable. All of that happens in like 2 minutes, and it's just incredible. Now we get into the elite, pretty clearly the elite 5 scenes of the series. And you guys can let me know if you agree or not. Number 5 is the, already mentioned, the murder-suicide scene between Amon and Tarlok in the book 1 finale of Korra. Shocking, incredibly well done, emotional, definitely the best thing that happens in that finale. Number 4 I have as the Ryu scene in episode 302 Rebirth. This is the funniest. I know I said that's my funny. The Airbender Finder is my favorite, but this is the funniest scene.
So you're the Avatar.
Yeah. So
everybody cares.
John Hader and Maria Bamford just completely killing it in this. This is like not often does Korra actually seem like a comedy show.
That's why you were saying it was important that I know who voiced him. This is John Hader.
It's John Hader, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention when you told me the first time. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah. Tina, you fat lard, come get some.
Yeah, no, Blades of Glory was on yesterday, so.
Yeah, there you go. Blades of Glory, excellent movie. Yeah, but this is, Korra genuinely seems like a comedy show here. Like, the scene is absurdly well done and funny. I think in the commentaries, either Mike or Brett, I think Mike said this was his favorite scene of the show. That's a good, incredibly written Josh Hamilton script.
I love when people push characters' buttons for comedic effect, and I like when they do it without even knowing they're doing it.
And it's great because Ryu is actually Ryu.
Ryu is
amazing.
Number 3 I have is the end of the stakeout, episode 309.
Yes.
The reveal of the twist at Korra and Asami being chained up. Shocking. No. Incredibly,
I've never been so shocked in my life.
Incredibly well paced, and just probably the most well executed sequence in all of Korra.
Yeah.
Yes.
That misdirect. Number 2 and number 1 is tough, right? It's obviously going to be the two ends of the two last seasons, but number 2 I have as the Korrasami end of book 4. Incredibly emotional, cathartic, just gorgeous. Just gorgeous scene from Asami entering to them talking. Watched it more than any other scene, definitely. And it's socially important, all of the above. Just gorgeous. And my number 1 is the end of The end of book three, which I think
so
beats
it's like,
it out.
Do you want to be sad or do you want to be happy? That's how you pick.
Yeah, I think this beats it out because this is so many layers, right? Like you have Cora being in the wheelchair, her being sad, combined with Jenora's ceremony, which to me, of course, is incredibly emotional on my end, and just that juxtaposition is still just I can't believe that they did something that good. It's shocking to me that they were capable of doing something that good, right? It's the entire third act of the finale, and it's not all there. Like you have some blatant lines from like Zuko and Raiko, but just overall, this is the best sequence, scene, whatever in show history, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Agree, disagree.
I said that when the episode happened, and you're like, "Are you sure? You know what you're saying?" There,
I don't. Well, no, you said it's the best episode. We're gonna have a separate episode rankings podcast, which we'll debate whether it's the best episode,
which will actually be just a Mel versus Dylan duel, while the rest of us kind of have rankings.
Yeah, there you go.
It will be.
I mean, it tends to happen. Sam, do you think that this was the best scene in the show? The end
I
of
do.
Book three. Wow. Okay, we're unanimous then.
Woo.
And would you all have the Kurosami scene as number two? Or is that more
questions? Can there be like a tie?
Yeah, see, tie. I'm all for ties.
No
see,
ties.
Sam gets it.
No ties.
This is the problem I had when I was trying to see if I liked the finale better than this episode, that episode, because I was like, do I like the happy or the sad?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, that's how you pick. Like, would I rather be sad?
And
or happy?
I honestly
like,
think it comes down to what Joss Whedon said, where it's like, you can't always give people, in terms of like doing, like, because he's famous for really screwing with characters and making it awful. But basically, what he says is sometimes you can't give people what they want, they have to get what they need, which is, I think, a good. The end of book three is an excellent example of that.
Yeah,
definitely. In action.
All right, let's do one of Teresa's lists. I think she sent a really interesting list, which was top five character designs. So she says, because I'm a character design weeb. Character design weeb, okay. Number five, she says, Pulley. She's 9 feet tall and her haircut is hella, need I say more.
I accept.
You accept.
I was in love with Pili. I was like, it's like no one noticed, and I was like, guys, wait, she's like 12 feet tall. And we're like,
No one took notice of that until like the last three episodes. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh wait, she's like ridiculously tall.
Wait, she's huge.
She was like sitting down in every scene before that.
Number four, she has Cora. Specifically, Cora in the season three finale. Her hair down, the chain around her arm, her physique, and the way they animated her movement was so powerful and breathtaking. Bad choice of words, stunning. I said that correct. Good job, Teresa. Number three, she has Kuvira. Congratulations on your face, you crazy dictator. The eyebrows, the unique eyes, the mole, the hair, the armor, just everything. Wow, good job.
It's like those things where it's like, I don't want people that I hate to look pretty.
Number two, she has Rava / Vatu. They definitely count as characters. I love them. They're giant freaking kites, but the symbols on them, how they move everything is so cool.
Cool.
And number one, she has Amon. Obviously, the mask is a huge part of his character. It was so menacing and iconic that I really don't think Korra has topped him as far as being a visually intimidating villain. Okay, sure, Unalaq became a titan and stuff, but that wasn't until the very end. Amon was terrifying from the beginning. Also, his mask was really hard to draw. The struggle is real. Just throwing that out there.
His mask is really hard to draw. I will.
Yeah, I do like the fact that they gave him an emotionless mask because that makes him even creepier.
Yeah.
What do you think of Amon as number one on this list, Sam?
I don't know. Why are you asking me? Oh, yeah, I go to art school.
Yeah,
that's
art.
Probably why. I don't want to say that I agree. I think there have been better designed characters than Amon. I feel like Amon would be, if this were a top 10 list, he'd be maybe number 10 for me.
I feel like
he'd
Amon,
be on a low scale.
I feel like Amon maybe is the most iconic design, if that makes sense.
Masks are always iconic.
Yeah, masks are very iconic. Look at the Phantom of the Opera.
Off the top of your head, who would you have as number one in terms of
me?
Character
design? Varric.
Varric.
Yeah, because Varric's cool.
He is cool. I don't know.
I'd have like a Sami or Kuvira as the top of my list.
Sami's design is excellent.
I have that hair.
Personally, I don't know. Personally, I really love Opal's design too. I don't have no expertise on this, but I just think her
also,
haircut,
Cora's short hair,
her haircut,
like,
her adorableness. Yeah, which by the way,
Dylan, would you kill me if I like made a list right now?
You can make a list right now. We can come back to that. That's fine.
Yes. Well, I'm going to make another list.
Well, I think we're going to you now, though. Well, you will pause.
We're not going to me now.
Okay, fine. First, let's do Ty Dao's top five characters, because we didn't do that.
Ty Dao.
Yeah, Ty Dao.
Blast
from the past, still active on Tumblr and stuff. Participant in Ty Cat, one of the original Dom Lefeng ships, with Mel. So let's go. Delaney has no idea what that is, but let's start with his top five characters. Number five, he has Wu. Another unexpected hit for me. He had more character development in one book than some characters in book one throughout the series. He reminds me a bit of early book one Sokka. Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, Wu, I think, was just incredible development for a side character. I think it should be noted here. Number four, he is Varric. I was surprised. I thought I was going to dislike him when they first showed him in book two. However, he grew on me, and I honestly think Bolan had a lot to do with this. Bolan had an impact on him, and it's great. At first, he's a sketchy businessman, and after his romance with Bolan grew, he became more gentle and grew a conscience of what is right and wrong. His treatment of Julie is also very interesting, and I expected them to date at the end, but the wedding was great. They actually became my OTP. Well, not the OTP, you know, but that's okay. Yeah. Number three, he is Cora. I was indifferent to her in book one, hated her in book two, liked her in book three, loved her in book four. Her spiritual growth in the series was a bumpy ride. At the end, it was worth getting to where she was she was as the Avatar at the end. If she wasn't so unlikable in the beginning, she'd be higher on the list. In terms of favorites, I can understand that. In terms of, like, character arcs, I think that kind of makes her arc incredible, you know, starting from where she did. Bolan, number two, he is Bolan. While many say he was just comic relief, I loved his progression from books one to four. Air had him as Mako's younger brother, mostly living in his cooler and almost writer's pet brother. Then in book two, he met Varric and started to find a place for himself in the world with Katara being the... With Korra, I assume, being the Avatar, Mako being a cop, Asami running company, his concentrated misjudging people's character was subtle, but really good overall. They ended being correct when he told Mako that Kuvira was just like Korra. That's true. This naive young man is compassionate, loyal, and has some self-esteem issues and tries to laugh it off on occasion. It's a shame he didn't touch on what he will do after this is over. And his number one is Asami. There you go.
Yes!
Asami is just an incredible character. To start off with book one, I knew I was going to fall in love with her. Her character. A lot of people thought that she was going to be evil, and even Bryke was going to do that. However, they fell in love with her too, so they decided against it. This was great. What was not great was how constantly shafted and pummeled she was by writing and story compared to the other characters. After book one, it seems they struggle quite a bit on deciding what to do with her. Most of the time, she's delegated to Driver. Too bad she didn't go a Batman on us and have a utility belt to use in combat. She has been shown to be emotionally mature after Mako's cheating, her father almost killing her, and Mako choosing Korra over her. Again, her company going bankrupt and her father dying. She almost broke in book two, but remained strong. There you go. Are you ready to use your top five characters, Sam?
Oh, I didn't know that we already did it. I was about to ask. Yes, I am ready to do my top characters.
We already did the rest of ours, but yeah, so you cool. Go ahead with your 5-1 now.
That's good for you. Okay. Number five. I want to say Zaheer. I haven't really... This isn't concrete. I was, like, trying to think about it. But Zaheer, I think.
Why do you like Zaheer?
He's voiced by Henry Rollins, and Henry Rollins is cool, and I'm the only one who appreciates it.
Okay.
Number two,
four.
I don't know. No, Dylan, I'm listing reasons why Zaheer is cool.
Why else is Zaheer cool?
A list within a list. Why? If you will.
Listception.
I did that for Jenora. Why else is Zaheer cool?
That's nice. Let's see. Henry Rollins, he's cool. I don't know. I think, like, he's this really awesome villain guy who, like, isn't necessarily, like, all that bad. He is very human, and I like that. The end. Anyway. Yes.
Okay.
Moving on. Number four, Varric. He's hilarious. The end.
The end.
Number three, Asami. Because she's Asami. You know, whatever. Anyway. Number two, Korra. If you would have asked me this before this season, Korra would not be on this list. Because, I don't know, this season, like, I felt a really strong connection to Korra. And I thought that she was, like, I don't know, I really liked her this season. And I felt like I could personally relate to her this season. And, yeah, so that's why she's number two right now.
We have the same two and three.
Cool. Anyway, number one, Bolan. Even after all these years... I'm so loyal to Bolan. I don't, even though, like, like the way the places that his character went are just not cool.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, they just took him places and made him, like, not the coolest guy ever. But, like, he's such a dork, and, like, he's so nice, and, like, his heart's in the right place, and he tries to do good things all the time, but he just falls short all the time, and, like, I still love him, and, like, we're bros, and I like him. We're similar, me and Bolin.
You and Bolin, yeah.
We're, like, the same person.
Anyway,
that's my top five.
Cool. Yeah, that's interesting. All three of us, different number ones, and also Teresa has a different number one.
Cool.
Lots of variation there.
I guess I'll listen. Oh, I don't want to listen, but I'll listen.
Okay, you could listen back to find that number one.
I'll listen back to when I was in the car coming home.
Okay, cool.
What you
let's do my top five. Here's an interesting one. Nation power rankings at the end of Korra. So this is different. No, so I
there's only five nations.
It's true. So this is the top five. So
I hate power rankings.
Well, this is different. This is interesting, right? Like, what is the political atmosphere of the Korra at the Avatar world now at the end? And you guys can chime in on this because I didn't think about it that much.
A risk board.
But yeah. So to start, number five.
Know who also did these power rankings? Dylan Kuvira, probably.
Yeah, Kuvira definitely did this.
Well, I am Kuvira, apparently. Except, you know, not nearly as fabulous, obviously, unfortunately. Okay, number five, the lowest on this list, I have as the Earth quote unquote kingdom. I think it's completely fragmented. No power system, no government system. It's just a complete mess after Kuvira is taken down. And I think it should be the bottom.
I kind of laughed it off.
Yeah, it's okay.
At the wedding.
The quote-unquote kingdom. Who even knows what it is anymore? The democratic states of the earth.
I'm still there mad about my shirt.
Your shirt is no longer.
It might revert to regional governor's power. That seemed to be what was happening when Kuvira was taking down the territory.
Well, I mean, it's just like what happened to Alexander the Great's empire. That's what it sounds like they're doing. Like, I mean, his empire fell apart, and they were because the regional governors and all that. So that's what will happen with seemingly with the Earth Kingdom, because that's essentially what Kuvira did. She conquered everything, tried to rule it, didn't work, and then now.
Maybe
the Earth Kingdom's too big to be ruled by one person.
Is it gonna revert to...
That's what happened with Alexander the Great.
Yeah,
empire.
Well, that's the thing. Is like these empires, like, history will tell you that any empire gets too big. Russia, the Ottoman Empire.
The Roman Empire.
All of that stuff, it gets too big. You can't rule the world.
Yeah, they want all the land, but all the land doesn't work.
It's gonna... Maybe power will... be claimed by Bert Cooper now, from Mad Men, the voice of
no
him.
One knows what you're talking.
You know what I'm talking about. What? You do the voice of him, the governor in episode one of book four. Okay, there you go. Anyway,
wow.
Remember when we thought he was going to be someone important?
Yeah, but then he was just in one episode. Character. All right, number four, nation power rankings. I have the Air Nation. So it's pretty impressive that they're not at the bottom because there's like 20 of them. But I actually think considering they have.
It's better than the
They're unified, and they have a central leader in Tenzin, I actually think.
I would put the Water Tribe here, because they don't do anything.
So, Water Tribe is my number three, right? So we can talk about that now. So I think that it's basically two different nations, but Eska and Desna, I feel like, have enough of a military in the north, even though we don't see it, that they're probably better than 20 airbenders. That's what I would say, you know?
I actually don't think
Desna and Esna by themselves might even be better.
They might be, except not Jinora, so.
Desca
and Esna versus Jinora, I'm not sure who wins that. It's close, maybe. Okay, but anyway, Water Tribes are three. So then two and one is the big toss-up. I have two as the United Republic. So...
Always the Fire Nation forever.
So the United Republic has an army, obviously. They don't have that much land, though, and they theoretically don't have that many people. Whereas the Fire Nation, number one.
And their capital gets demolished.
And Republic City is destroyed. That's another good point.
If Korra throws a grudge match with someone and they lose, like, half the city.
whereas number one, the Fire Nation has unified leadership. They have presumably still a very large army after the Avatar times.
Well,
even though they're
still the most well-developed military.
And they're the most well-developed military, probably the most well-developed nation still. And so we start where we ended. Once again, the Fire Nation is in the most powerful position, I feel like, in the Avatar world.
It's coming back.
They're luckily, luckily, Honora does not seem like Honora's she will
like hashtag nonsense wars.
Yeah,
she's just going to stick
it back
herself.
To the Fire Nation.
It is. It's the, this is the importance of Zuko and though and Zuko's legacy. Like any other leader would likely try to seize power here, though. But since what Zuko has went through in Avatar and what he imparted on his daughter, will make that not be the case.
Him and May.
Raised. Him and Suki raised a beautiful daughter who will not choose that.
I think he means Suki.
Suki, yeah.
Obviously.
Sam,
pretty sure you mean Suki.
I mean, if Suki happens, that means Taka happens, which I'm cool with, you know, obviously.
Taka happened and Suki happened. That's how it works.
Taka would have happened without
that I'm
Suki.
Kidding. Oh my god.
Nope, I'm not kidding. Okay. Delaney.
He's literally not kidding.
Delaney, let's do one of yours. Which do you think is the best out of the remaining ones?
Out of mine?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, there's top five nerds and top five nerdiest, dorkiest things to ever happen, so I feel like one of those two.
Okay, let's do dorkiest things to happen.
Okay, well, shocker, the majority of these are Mako.
Not surprising.
So,
okay.
So I'll start with five. Mako's stupid police one-liners in when he pulls everyone, like, he has a book of them, and he pulls people over, and he's like, oh, it's a good thing the police are here. Like, shut up, Mako. God.
In Rebel Spirit. First
so nerdy. Okay,
you can tell him Mako sent you.
Yeah, it's so bad. And
good
then,
thing the police are here.
Yeah.
So wink, bad. Wink.
Number four, when, you know, he's dated Korra, he dated Asami, really awkward breakup, but he salutes them and walks away.
As you were.
And even Korra and Asami make fun of this. Yeah. Like, Mako, you are a dweeb. And then... Over
but
in the
not
top.
Not in a redeeming way. In like
yeah, not in a redeeming way. And then top, and then now we're into the top three. Three, Mako's logbook, which still is not a thing. Like, where is this meme, guys? Where
he put it. He put it in his logbook.
Yeah, he put in his
so
logbook.
So it's true.
5 minutes ago.
Yeah, my recent that's this is in the state of course. My recent headcanon is that he's writing Kurosami fan fiction in his
definitely,
logbook. Yeah,
yes.
And that's why no one gets to see his logbook.
Yeah,
yes, definitely. And then number two, Mako reading the manual on the inner reporting to Republic City.
It's an emergency. Take out your books and read with me on page
section 1005B.
We're going to do some popcorn reading.
Not only is this mostly Mako so far. This is all Mako so far.
It's all Mako.
Is number one also Mako?
Number one is not Mako.
Who is number one?
Number one is Lin and Toph going, "Hey, Chief."
Yeah, like, that's Chief. Pretty.
Hey, Chief.
You are mother and daughter, and you what? Hey, what? Chief. Hey, Chief. Hey, like, hey, are Chief. You people? Are you what? Like, who does that?
I think it's hard. I think it's hard to top Mako taking it, saying turn to page 184.
Really, I'm surprised you didn't put like his letter, the core, on there.
That was
it
pretty.
Almost,
that
no,
was
it
pretty,
almost was in there.
That was
really
pretty
right.
Dorky too.
This list, it was really hard picking through.
The
all
weather's been
terrible.
Great.
This is Delaney's favorite Mako moments. There you go. That was the
no,
this
not
list
favorite. No, it was really hard to do. Hard to pick out the dorkiest things Mako because all Mako does is dorky thing. Well, he's either horrible or he's being a dork. Like those are the only two modes Mako has. So.
Okay. Cool. Delaney providing the comic relief
oh,
list
by the way,
to the seriousness.
I'm surprised, Delaney, that one of your oh crud moments wasn't when Sue was like, "Oh, no wonder Tenzin dumped you."
It almost
was. That
was
a huge.
It was.
Girl,
that was pretty big too.
The oh crud could be a top 10. That list was really hard to put together.
Yeah, they actually talked about that on the commentary too. It was like. So, by the way, the commentary highlights are up on the Dongfang Tumblr, dongfang.tumblr.com. Okay, Mel, let's do our Kurosami.
Okay.
So we're gonna do.
I'm excited.
You two can Delaney and Sam can comment. We're gonna go alternate between us, unless you also have Kurosami moments. Sam.
No, I don't.
Okay, so let's start with your number of top five. Korra and Asami. They don't need to be romantic. Whatever. They're just Korra and Asami moments. Mel, what's your five?
My number five is the driving scene.
Why do you love the driving scene?
Because that was the first time they actually got to be people around each other for. I mean, they had their moments before, but this was the first
making,
time where
making
it was about
fun of
them.
Mako, Korra being a terrible
this
driver,
was about
girlfriend,
them
girlfriends.
And
never had a girlfriend.
This
out
is my
fact.
Point, though, because before it was like circumstantial; they were around each other, working together because other things. Like literally, Asami's like, "You're learning how to drive," which is a horrible idea.
Yeah,
but. It's funny because it's like, why we saw Korra trying to drive once before and it's awful. So I think it's funny that it's like there, she's getting her to drive. I think that's just a funny scenario. I think the dialogue was good. I liked that weird dude who was driving behind them really angry when Korra wasn't driving her car when he like did that slow stare.
There were so many fan fictions of this, yeah, and it actually happened.
Yeah, like, it was literally like it was like that episode where they're like, oh, you mean the Kurosami fanfic episode? But literally, it was just such a great scene, like, seeing them talk and drive and all that, and the salute and making fun of Mako and talking about how they don't care that they both dated Mako and it's fine.
Yeah.
And then and then Korra is so struck by Asami's beauty, she crashes.
Oh, I also like when Asami totally, like, made her think that. She was like, wait, you kissed Mako? I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I knew that, like,
Asami being joking. That's
just,
yeah,
a femur.
That's also my number five, and I agree with everything you said. Cool. What's your fourth?
My four is the Are You Cold tea scene.
How is that not higher?
Because I've got other things that are higher.
There's other ones.
Really? Is that how lists work
that's
now?
Literally why it's not higher. I think it's funny. I like everyone's joke about, oh, the girl who can self-heat, of course she's gonna be cool. Like, nice try, Asami.
Nice try,
Asami. Cut matches for outfit.
Yeah, I like that. I just like that whole setup. And it's really beautiful backgrounds. It's nice little, not, you know, and it also weaved together some themes that were going on. With Korra's like, I'm not sure about being the Avatar and all this other stuff. And Asami is like, oh, that's nonsense. And then Tenzin shows up with the massive.
Rudely interrupting Tenzin, so. Yeah. This would have been my six, but did not make my top five. Four, I have Dear Korra, Dear Asami, you know, them writing letters to each other.
Yes. Korra,
where'd you come from, little cutie? Yeah.
No, that's Dear Asami.
Yeah.
I miss you so.
Yeah, these are Asami's letter to Korra, wonderful, then Korra only writing to Asami, the best, the end. Mo, what is your number three?
My number three is That Blush.
That blush. Are you separating this from the argument?
Yes, I'm separating those as two different scenes.
Yeah, so just That Blush.
That was ridiculous. And that was the first time I was like, are they? Did they?
Yeah.
And I remember, Dylan, I remember because I saw that scene before I saw the actual episode, I think. Because I was logging on and then Nick.com was being stupid. I was like, oh, I'll go on Tumblr. That was a mistake. Because I saw that and I saw one of your asks where someone asked you, like, did they actually blush? And you were like, I think they did. Oh, no.
They actually blushed. Yeah, it was crazy.
So I like that whole interaction where she's like, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. She's like, only 3 years. And they hugged out and all
true.
That. True. So.
Yeah, this was my three as well, along with the argument. I combined them. The blush, of course, and then this probably is Mel's too, but maybe one. But them arguing was just showed their caring for each other. Korra objecting to Asami seeing her father because he cares about her, and then getting into like a couple's feud is the best. And then Maka's like, what's happening? You know?
It's really what's going on best. With you.
And the blush, of course, was incredible. What's your number two, Mel?
My number two is the wheelchair scene.
The wheelchair scene? Like,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny because I didn't read that when she said if you need to talk or anything, I didn't read as much into that as much into it as other people did. I was like, oh, that's nice. She's being nice. And then people were saying, stop. And I was like, wait a minute. So I went back and I watched it again. I was like, oh, you know, that could be interpreted a few different ways. But I love the fact that it was Asami who was the caretaker who was wheeling her. Like, we literally don't see anyone else touching that wheelchair except for Asami. I like that she was making her up for her big, whatever she called it. She was like, oh, a big Avatar formal appearance, whatever it was. I think that whole scene was really nice because it came from a place of Korra not being great. So you don't need to be overt in any of that stuff because it's not the time and the place.
Yeah, that's also my number two. Or anything.
Yes, going back, I now realize that or
that's
anything.
All that needs to be said. No, your number one, why is it the argument?
Why is it the argument? Yeah. I think it really just showed the depth of a lot of things, like in one line. It's specifically when Asami says, when she gets mad and says, you think you can disappear for 3 years and then act like you know what's best for me? Because it reveals, you know, just how much Asami was hurt by the fact that Korra did disappear. And it's the kind of emotional closeness that you have with, honestly, like someone you're in a relationship with, because you only get super duper duper mad at the people that you're closest with is essentially what's going on. I mean, you've got like the sort of polite angriness that they've got at each other in season one. And here in the middle of lunch, like 5 seconds after seeing each other, she's like, she's just digging into Korra, and Korra's like backing off, like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Like, it was literally just such a couple's fight, and it was so great.
Yeah, I feel like this is the deepest, you know, interaction between the two, the rawest
raw one. Emotion.
Yeah, there was blood and nails.
It was
and,
real. Yeah. All that. Real. Just one line.
I don't have an issue with this as number one. I do have an issue with you not ranking the finale scene.
Let me defend why. Because I thought about this, because I was like, am I putting the finale in there? But I had all these other moments in my head that I liked before the finale. And this is the thing, is like, the finale told me everything I already knew. These scenes were the reason liked it in the first place.
Yeah, I'll take that. So. But my number one is still the finale scene, because of how cathartic and emotional it was. And I've discussed, it's been on many other lists before, but yeah.
Their hands made out.
Their hands made out. #HandsMadeOut.
Like, and it's not only just that, like, it's a really, like, beautiful scene in of itself,
it's
anyway.
Gorgeously animated and, yeah, just that everything. Come on, let's go together, really? And just then the realization of feelings. Everything about it is wonderful, number one.
Wait, are you counting the talk at the wedding as part of that too?
All final talks. Minutes, everything. All, everything from when Tenzin leaves. Okay. Thoughts on this Delaney Sam?
I'm all for it. I mean, I have a list that is like the top five most special moments to me, and that moment is my number one. So like, yes, I feel you.
Spoilers.
Can't go to that one. Jeez.
But the other four are good.
Okay,
so
let's do. Let's do one of yours, Delaney. Let's do. Or did we do Sam? I don't remember the order. Let's do top five funniest lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so five. I will take, when we get to four, please feel free to yell at me, because I struggled at four. Number five is Woo Down.
Woo Down.
Like, it's just so stupid. Woo Down. Like, he said it twice. Like, he said it twice, and then not only did he say it twice, Mako said it. Like, I just can't even, this dumb
woo,
line.
Woo Down.
Your catchphrase.
They have a sitcom.
Yeah.
Yes, Woo good. Down.
What's your four?
Get a real dog.
Get a real dog.
I'm not mad at you.
It's like, that line was
like, just happens. Like, get a real dog.
So stupid. Great. Loved it.
It's
you're just so out of, like, they're yelling, and you're not even supposed to be really paying attention to what they're saying, and then you just hear, get a real dog.
Wait. When was this?
Yeah, what episode was the theme?
This was...
Peace March.
It was
that dude who yelled...
Yeah, get a real dog. They're doing March.
God. Yeah, like, yeah, that guy. I do remember that guy. They're doing the peace march and Korra's in front of it, and just everyone's yelling like "Boo!" Northern Water Tribe's awesome. And this dude's like, "Get a real dog."
He's just riding Naga. So good.
What is three?
Okay, obviously this line was like amazing to me because it used to be my Tumblr URL, Guru Lakshmir. Like, Kaya, I love you.
Guru Lakshmir,
Guru Lakshmir, or whatever.
God, Dad, I don't care about Guru Lakshmir.
This is why I love Kaya.
A lot of Kaya love on our list. Yeah.
She doesn't care about anything.
Yeah. She does.
What is number two?
Boil it yourself.
Ooh,
it's funny
it.
And amazing. It's so good.
Boil it yourself.
That got a cheer when they did a reading of that scene at Comic-Con.
Yeah, one of the most iconic lines.
So
boil
important.
It, you're a firebender. Boil it
boil yourself.
It'd be in the top
chuck
five most
important. Chuck
up a deuce
and walk out of the room.
What is your number one?
Vatu, the biggest, meanest, scariest kite that ever flew.
Yes. There you go. That is great.
Most important line ever.
I mean, a scariest guy that
ever. I could do a top five list of everything Vatu says, because that's hilarious. But
yeah, just top ten times Vatu says Rava. There you go. Yeah.
Yes.
Running out of time.
Rava.
Number one was almost Meet You at the End of the World. That was almost
Rava.
Rava. So good.
Nice.
Anything
good,
Vatu
good,
says.
Good list, Delaney. Sam, let's do top five saddest moments.
Okay.
Aww.
All right. So,
you should have done sad, then funny.
Okay. So, number five. It's when... What is number five? That's a good question. I haven't really thought about number five. All right. Number five. Let's just go with the flow. Basically, various moments in Enter the Void that were kind of sad, but then they turned out not to be sad, such as Bolin sacrificing himself. We thought Tenzin was dead, But that was the episode before.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be number
five. Okay, that's five.
Basically, all that stuff.
All that stuff.
People
that
almost dying who didn't die.
Okay, what is four?
People almost dying who didn't die. Number four. Her, she's dead.
Yes.
That's number four.
Mm-hmm.
Who's
anyway,
dead?
Hiroshi.
Asami's face, like, kills
me. I heard Hershey.
Hershey's dead.
What? I mean, he's been dead for... Hershey's been... Milton yeah, S. Hershey's been dead for a while.
Yeah, that actually was a really tense thing.
Yeah. Very, very, very sad. Very single very tear sad. Down my face. Anyway. This is bad, because I picked episodes, and then I had, like, two things from these episodes that I think are sad. We're just gonna go with it. Number three, the murder suicide in Endgame 112.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad.
Yeah,
there was even a single tear down Amon's face. Very sad. And then also Korra was looking off a cliff, and that was also very sad. Sad. Anyway, number two, the wheelchair scene with Korra in the season three finale.
Yeah.
All of that,
mm-hmm.
very depressing, yeah. especially like her.
The tear at the end.
The single tear, there you go.
Yep.
It has a single tear.
It does have a telltale single tear.
It's very sad. And then I can pick a moment. So number one is Korra alone, the whole entire episode. The whole episode.
Just the whole episode.
The entire thing.
A 22-minute moment.
But
Yes. It made me cry. It's very sad. Too real. Except for, like, you know, Toph, but who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares about Toph? She's not sad. She doesn't believe in sadness.
She doesn't believe in sadness.
Apparently not.
I mean, not really, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair, sis.
Anyway, so.
Cool.
I'm starting to realize that all my lists are really stupid.
That was a good one. I like that list.
Dylan, you told me that my list could be stupid.
They could be stupid, yeah.
I have a top five worst things.
I was
going to
do the list of top five moments Asami was welding something.
That's only happened.
But then I did.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do my top five Korra voice actor MVPs. So I'm trying to rank these based
on... How can you have a top five MVPs?
Top
five Korra voice actors by value they bring to their role. So, right? So it's very hard to rank the top five best voice actors, but we can do relative to the role that they play, right? So you could say, oh, Jennifer Varney's number one. She's the main role. But okay, we know she's the main character relative to the bit to the role. All right, so five... I think there's a tie. I think there's a... For me, there's a clear four, and then five is tough. I'm going to put Steve Blum at five. Because of how good he is with Amon. But I think there could be a lot of people
he's
in five.
With everything.
I think he's
he
very
just
good
has
with
an
Amon,
awesome
though.
Deep voice.
He does. And he does just the entire creepiness of Amon just completely makes season one. So I think that's a good value moment. Number four, I have Zelda Williams as Kuvira.
Why is she
there's three better, but she's the highest villain ranked. Like, I think she does the best villain job out of any in the series, which is a very high praise. Like,
she's so tiny, and
she's
her
just
voice
especially
is so
in the
big.
Finale. It's
yes,
so tiny, and her voice is so big.
Like, I have no complaints about any line she said in the entire series. Right? She just does such a fantastic job.
She could read
job.
The phone book, and I'd be cool with it.
Three, I have Janet Varney at three. For a while, I didn't necessarily think Janet was bringing too much to the role of Korra, but once Korra's emotional stakes stepped up towards the end of the series, like, she stepped up as well. I think she does a fantastic job in Korra alone. I think she does great in the finale, everything in book four, towards the end of book three as well. I think she does a fantastic job with Korra, especially at the end. And then I think there's two clear best voice actors relative to the value they bring. Two, and it's very close. You could go either way. I'm going to put two as John Michael Higgins. So Varric, he's the funniest character in the show. Really, like, he brings a lot of humor to lines that maybe shouldn't be as funny as they are. And he's just...
Julie, do the thing.
Just, yeah, like, he sells that. That could have been just a running gag they ran into the ground.
Like,
but...
Julie, do the thing.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. But he just continually brings life to that role, and it's fantastic. And one I have as PJ Byrne, as Bolin. I think he adds the most value to this role relative to any other role on the show. He's consistently improvises the most lines. He adds the most humor to this role. And Bolin's not necessarily a character that's written incredibly well, but PJ Byrne always bringing incredible value.
That's why Bolin's my fave.
Because PJ Byrne.
Yeah, because he's just so great.
Tidal also ranked top five, so let me go through his top five. He also has Avatar ones in here, though, too. He has D. Bradley Baker, Mae Whitman, Zelda Williams / Grey Delisle, PJ Byrne, and Mako. Not the character Mako.
But the guy.
But the guy. So on the same page for the core voice actors. Any comments on the list? Anyone's who you put
Zelda
on the
Williams
one down there?
Should be at the top
I think
of
it's,
any voice actor.
I think it's list. Somewhat unreasonable to put her higher than the top two.
Like, so good.
Anyway. Can we just, like, hire her for everything now?
Yeah, let's just hire
Can she,
Williams
like,
for...
read my directions in my Garmin?
Dude, we should get her to do, like, a GPS.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, slightly, like, threatening me if I don't turn left. Just sort of turn
and
left.
then you get kind of turned on at it, and it's, like, not
oh
good.
My God.
You need to concentrate. Yeah, there you go. That's how Kuvira works, right?
It is how Kuvira works.
True, be fair, yeah. Okay, Mel, top five techs.
Text.
Explain text.
It was just, I was thinking, I was like, what's a list? Because I needed more lists that wasn't fight scenes or Kurosami, because I felt like those would be obvious lists. And I was like, oh, what about the technology stuff that we see? Because it's interesting, because we don't see, like, a minor theme / plot. I mean, obviously a theme in this Inkor is, like, the growth of technology. Is it good? Is it bad? What have you? And also a minor plot has been watching the technology grow. In the world of Avatar, so I thought it would be interesting to do a list on tech stuff.
Okay.
Not text messages, but
no, but that's coming next.
I keep thinking that you're saying text.
Text, and
like technology. They don't have phones.
T-E-C-H-S.
Not yet.
Okay,
so number five is... I friggin' hate the mecha suits, but I had to put them on there. I specifically picked Kuvira's versions, because... I just hate the mecha suits so much, but if I didn't put them on here... Honorable mention is a Sodomobile. It didn't go on here because it's a freaking car. And that's not impressive to me. Four is the Equalist Glove, just because I think it's interesting the way that it was used, zapping.
Weapon of choice.
Yeah, well, and then it kept coming back because it was like literally like a Sami, like pulled it out of her butt constantly.
What is it?
Like one second she's just standing there, next second she just is wearing it. So, but yeah, I think it's an interesting little device in terms of like dealing with benders, because I think it's interesting because before that we didn't really have a thing where non-benders like specifically had a problem fighting benders. So now we do, and they've invented this glove that basically electrocutes them. In small doses and sometimes not so small doses, and I thought that was interesting. Three is airships, like even though they're just blimps.
Just blimps.
But I think they're designed very cool, and I like them.
Cool.
My last two I kind of switched around a lot, but two I had is the air suits. Because on the one hand, it's not really anything special. Like, it's literally just, like, the gliders. But at the same time, it's a lot more practical than the gliders for a number of reasons. And I think they're nifty and they look pretty. And the number one is the metal cables, because I think that's just such a I was going to say nifty again. I'm not going to do that. I think it's just such a cool way to zoom around the city for these metal bending cops. And I think it's such a cool use of metal bending in mixing bending with technology.
Cool. Thumbs up.
Gruel.
Nice list. Gruel. Yeah. Delaney, let's do top five explosions.
Yay.
Hey,
we
Michael
thought this
Bay.
List was stupid.
That is kind of stupid, but let's do it.
Michael Bay over here.
Okay. Number five, explosion in Zalfu. With the barrel. Yeah,
the end of The Terror
yeah.
Within.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait. Yeah, that
yes,
one.
That
right?
One.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, I mean that was an explosion, and that was in Korra.
Yep.
So that makes
sense. Yep. So this is like, this isn't necessarily like the most like these aren't shocking. This is like just completely like how pleasing and like
that was a cool explosion.
Yeah, that was a cool explosion.
Okay, what's number four?
A lot of people died, and it was awesome.
The boat explosion is only four.
The boat is the first one I think of for explosions.
Wow,
so I'm interested to see the other three.
All right, number three is that scene is. when the Republic City skyline is being demolished behind Korra.
In the series finale, yeah.
Oh, when she dodged the...
and then it, like,
the
blows on
The top three
fire.
Are in the finale. There are a lot of explosions.
She just kind
of
looks at it and she's like, huh.
Oh, yeah, that happened.
Oh.
Two.
Well, I'm kind of obsessed with that scene. Two is when the Colossus explodes. What a good explosion.
When it splits in half.
So good. I love it. And also just, like, the entire following scene with it, but yeah.
Yeah, one.
And then number one is when Korra and Kuvira explode.
Wait,
the
what?
The spirit beam.
When she blocks the thing.
Yeah, I guess that counts as an explosion.
When I thought that they died.
They basically died, yeah.
For 2 seconds, I was very convinced they were dead. Yeah.
Yes, same.
Cool. Those were explosions. Thumbs up. Sam, let's do top five facial hairs.
Okay,
oh, explosions are stupid.
I mean,
I've been facial hair. All my
I considered doing a hair list, but I knew
list
that
was stupid except oh crud.
Okay.
I don't know. This is a callback to podcasts long ago.
Yeah.
When I did a top five facial hair, and I was like, just why not? Why not just do it again?
Okay.
Because who cares?
Five.
Anyway, five. Hiroshi Sato, when he looks like Miyazaki, because like.
Yeah.
Whatever. Number four, Tanrock. Let's be real. Tanrock's really hot.
Yes.
Number three, Varric. Because let's be real. I don't know. The mustache makes the man. Now, I'm bouncing back and forth between two and one. I have to think in terms of, like, does it make the face look better? Or does it have to be, like, the epicness of the beard?
I don't know.
And I don't know.
You made the list.
You're the expert.
I know that. So I'm just going to just say both and just have it be unranked. So Aang and Zaheer. I feel like bearded Aang is like better. I don't think babyface Aang would have been good for life, just in general.
Aang's beard is like my favorite.
I mean, he looks like Abraham Lincoln. Like,
he does
and that's
look
like
Abraham
he
Lincoln.
Does.
To be perfectly honest, even like, this is going to sound very strange. Like, that is, like, my favorite style of beard. I don't know. Just, like, that, not the chin curtain, it's called. That.
Chin strap.
Yes, that. You can call it anything. So, that.
I guess it's more curtain than a strap.
But then Zaheer is, like, before, obviously, he shaves everything all the time. It's like, he has such a beard. He looks like a wily mountain man. Like a lion. This majestic.
But nice, yeah.
Majestic gray lion who I just
lions are here.
Lions are here.
Like,
this is a lion.
Just like dance in the wind, which, you know, he could. I don't know. So there you go.
There you go. The top five facial hair is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Continuing to move fast, let me do my top five Jinora moments. Unsurprising.
How did you pick five of them, Dylan?
I mean, to be fair, she doesn't do that much in the show. But
I just meant for your feels.
For my feelings, I know. Okay, number five, Jinora being rebellious against Tenzin in original Airbenders. Does that mean I'm the master now? It's pretty incredible. Number four, Jinora astral projects to Kai in 304, in harm's way, I guess. And kisses him on the cheek and sees that he's under the palace.
The place.
Yeah, the palace. Number three, Jinora lectures Wan Shitong on radios.
That is so
wonderful.
Good.
The still, little man in a box.
Yes, still wonderful. God. Number two, Jinora gets her tattoos. Only number two.
How is that number two?
Well, What's because I've already talked about number one. But yeah, Jinora getting her tattoos. Incredibly emotional and wonderful. Number one is Jinora with furry foot in the spirit world. The scene I've talked about so many times. In a new spiritual age. And yes, Jinora's solo scene. Mm-hmm. Her solo show. There you go. The top five Jinora moments. Delaney, let's do top five nerds.
All right.
No, that's
Jinora isn't.
Jinora actually isn't on top five nerds.
Jinora is not top five nerds.
She is literally the biggest nerd.
No, she's actually a nerd, but she's not a dork. There you go.
Yeah, no, this is really like top five, like, I kind of hate them. Like, dorks.
Oh, like, oh my god, you guys are such a dork.
Wow, you're
a nerd.
Yeah, like, no, that's what it is. Like, you're
like,
such a nerd.
Like, how can you, guys?
Like, top five. We have Huan. What Huan, an art nerd. Yeah. That's who Huan is.
Huan?
Huan.
Huan.
Skrillex. Oh, Skrillex. Huan. I was like, Skrillex. What is Huan?
Skrillex,
no.
Yeah.
Well, Skrill. Huan is a nerd. Juan's the original nerd, but no, he's not on this list.
Thank God.
So, Huan.
Huan.
How yeah, say his name. Yeah, nerd. Skrillex. Number four, Batar Jr.
Yeah.
No,
nerd.
He's
nerd.
Such a dork.
Such a nerd. Number three, Zaheer, because he's a Guru Lahima nerd. Nerd. He quotes him all the time. Nerd.
I think he's had full sentences where he literally just said, Guru Lahima.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Like, whenever he talks, just like, wow, what a nerd. Number two, Lin, because she has the number one nerd thing. Like, Lin, you're a nerd, stop. Like, the hey chief thing is so nerdy, yeah. She has to be on number two. And then guess who number one is?
Mako
is the biggest nerd.
Obviously.
Such a nerd.
Such a nerd. Like, he reads, like, he has a logbook, and he's, like, and he, the manual, like, yeah. He's just the biggest nerd.
He has, his own personal diary where he writes stuff down.
Such a nerd.
Only nerds have diaries, geez.
Real yes, though.
There you go. Solid, solid nerd list. Good job. Sam, did you do the updated, the character design?
What?
Did, no. You said you were going to do that. What's no,
okay. I did not say I was going to do
what's
that.
What's Narmiest moments? That's okay, what you wrote in chat.
From the TV Tropes definition of Narm. Narm meaning a work that is trying to be dramatic, scary, etc., but is instead hilarious. So, I hope everybody understands what that means.
Say it again.
Well, it's like things that are funny that aren't
unintentionally funny.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Number five. The whole Colossus deal.
That was just like higher.
Of course you did that, Kuvira.
It's a thing.
Like, you don't even have to explain. We're all just yes. The entire fandom was like,
of course, that's exactly what you did.
Of course.
I mean, it's not a metaphor. It's just, it's literally.
It's actually a Colossus.
It's actually a giant robot. So, yeah. Thanks, guys. Number five. Anytime Tenzin speaks.
Number four, yes.
Not number five. Did I say number?
Yeah.
Number four. Number four.
Tenzin speaking, definitely. Ploy to get more power. Yeah.
That is literally the line I wrote down.
Yes.
And he said, like, a lot of terrible things in the finale. Like, they're coming out of the portal, and, like, no, like, Tenzin.
Catch it up. Yes. Good job.
Thanks. Stop. Anyway, number three. When Mako says that he loves Korra in the book one finale, he says it in the dumbest way.
Yes.
I love you, Korra. Like,
I don't know if that's accurate, but...
No, it's really
dude, it's really... Like, he just, like, touches her cheek and, like, I love you, Korra. Like,
really?
What? Nobody says that. Shut up, Mako. Number two. The whole Unavatu, giant mega Korra,
yeah.
Whatever.
The kaiju fight.
Yeah, it was just like the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. But it was cool.
Cool.
Not really. Number one. The CGI mask on Aang's statue.
This is number one, mostly to Sam, but yes.
No, it's not mostly to me. It is the worst thing I've ever seen. Like... Oh my god. They just. List. Somebody made that mask. That giant Amon mask. Somebody made it. Both they in this world and time. In that world. And they just put it on Aang's statue. And it is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Like, they planned it. Like, they have to have planned that. Like, they were like, guys, we're gonna make this mask, and then when we take over, we're gonna put it on Aang's statue. They had to get measurements. Like, this was, like, very well planned out.
It's been, like, it's been over 2 years, and I cannot get over it.
Cannot get over it.
Because it's so stupid. Anyway, that's my list.
There you go. Narmiest moments. I think that's a pretty good list.
Yeah, that is the best, obviously.
You are the best, obviously. Let me do top five Korra locations. Now, there's not many locations in the show.
I almost considered this.
So I struggled to rank them.
Public City? Yes, yeah. I'm shocked you did
number
this.
Number five, Ba Sing Se.
Top 10 buildings.
No comments. Number four.
Top 10 buildings.
Number four, the Southern Water Tribe. There you go. Number three, Republic City.
How is the Southern Water Tribe ranked above Ba Sing Se?
Ba Sing Se is just there.
Yeah, it was just it was a place. Both,
it was just there. Number We've two, already been there. Number two, the spirit world, including Jaibaz Grove, the new portal location in the finale, and the old portal location.
Only those three things.
Hiya Rio Peak or whatever.
Whatever that is, yeah. And the clear number one is Zhaofu, the most incredible location design in the show. In the series, I think, just incredibly gorgeous. Yes,
yeah. I would live at Zhaofu. Like, I want to go there.
Maybe not because they apparently have a uniform.
No, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, the best.
I mean, it makes my decisions in the morning easier.
Yeah, I miss the domes.
The domes. All right, I mean, we'll have to we'll have to get the domes back up.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, they'll just
dismantle the Colossus. Hashtag dismantle the Colossus.
Delaney, top five moments. Explain what this is.
These are the top five moments. Like, these are the five most important moments of the entire series.
Is it different than scenes?
I mean, they are scenes.
Okay, number five.
Hey, Chief. God, like, it was just really, like, I can't even really explain. Like, it was so stupid and dorky, but it was great, and I didn't know I needed it until I had Lin. And of course, I had been anticipating Lin and Toph, from book one. I was like, Lin and Toph have to talk to each other right now. And it finally happened, and they said, hey, Chief. And I was like, really?
But then they fought. Yes. And then they made up.
Yes.
So I guess it's fine.
Number four.
When Lin said, I love you to Sue, and then goes off into battle. Oh, tears. I was like, they're gonna kill her. And it was a really important moment for Lin's character, and I was just like, yes, it's so important. And it was just really, like, and of course, because Lin's my favorite character, and I don't know, it's just, these are things that just, like, really struck me. Then, three, Janora's ceremony. Cried entire time.
The entire time. Yeah.
Yes, the entire time. Two, Lin's sacrifice in book one. Tore me up. Destroyed me. I listen to the music on the soundtrack and I cry.
And you just cry. I see a running theme in this list.
top five things that make Delaney cry, the list.
Also top five Lin, basically.
Yes.
Basically.
Number one.
Kurosami. Like the end, yeah. The finale. Like the last 2 minutes of the finale, just so important to me on every level. It's so good and beautiful, and I can't tell you how many times I've rewatched it. Like, so important. Yes.
So important.
So these are just, like, the top five things that, like, really struck out to me, and, like, these are the reasons I would tell people to watch The Legend of Korra, because these are, like, the things that struck out to me, and, like, you know, they're not, aside from, like, the finale and Jinora's ceremony, these aren't, like, incredible things for the show in and of itself, but, like, how they've touched me, and this is, like, why I would make other people watch the show.
Nice. There you go. Sam, top five hairs.
Cool.
I was hoping, kids.
Well, no. You better do this right.
Oh. Is that a threat?
We all know what.
I was thinking, because, you know, I've had multiple hairstyles throughout this year. This is a list I should make.
Yes.
So, number five, Janora when she's bald.
So bald.
No hair.
Why not Janora's new book four hairstyle?
I like her.
Exactly. I like her no hair. Also, like, I think she looks like Aang.
She does look like Aang. Cool. There you go.
Number four, Kai. Because I had that haircut once.
That undercut.
And I'm trying to get it back.
Desperately trying.
Crossing the threshold from Batar to Kai, but
I wonder if Batar is on this list.
Everyone but one dude had Batar's haircut.
Everyone has Batar's haircut.
So we couldn't even claim it was like a military thing. Like, it was literally just everyone wanted his haircut.
Yeah.
Where was I? Number three, Varric. He has a very luscious head of hair. It's very, very, like, I would kill for that hair. No, I wouldn't. I hate hair. Number two. Korra season, or book, rather, four.
Yes.
Hair, because it's cute. I like it. And number one, Asami all the time.
Thank God.
obviously. Because do you just notice that her hair is always shiny?
It's nobody else is shiny and...
No, like, her hair is literally colored with a shine, and nobody else's is.
It's because she can afford conditioner.
Obviously.
No, it's naturally.
Think I'm made of money?
Yes. Asami's luscious, shiny, beautiful unicorn hair that I just want to...
That hair flip.
Exists with...
There you go.
Anyway,
just
so there
look
you go.
At it constantly.
Can I make a
Well, now you are, Asami.
Yes.
Well, I don't have her hair.
List.
Yes.
I have very straight hair.
There's this guy. Do you guys remember in... Oh, crap. We talked about the scene where the bandits stole the food from Opal and Kai and that guy's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a guy at my school with that hair, and I'm like, wow.
Did he steal food from...
I mean, I only see him where we eat, so maybe. That might be an indicator. I don't know. But, yeah.
Whenever I look in the mirror, I see Batar Jr., and I'm so disappointed.
No.
No, Batar's hair is great.
Yeah, Batar's
hair. No, I hate him.
It's great. Okay.
Well, you can hate Batar. No, I understand hating Batar.
It's such a word I can't say.
Yes. Winding down, top five villains from both series ranked by how lovable they are. To me, at least.
I know who's not on this list.
Why are your list so... Why do you... Like, this is a problem.
This is a dumb list.
This podcast is a whole problem.
This is,
intervention, like, now.
Well, I wanted a list with Zhao number one. There you go. That's why I made this. Number five, Lieutenant. Lieutenant was very lovable.
Even though he had one job and he never got it done.
One job.
He literally...
But Naga took Lieutenant out.
There was this funny post a while ago where it showed all the things that, like, Lieutenant did right, but Amon's back was, like, literally turned in the scene. Like, he wasn't looking at it. He turns around and everything, like...
That's pretty great.
Blows up.
Yeah.
That's basic.
Number four, Gazan. I really love Gazan.
Yeah, Gazan's great. I didn't really appreciate him until after Gazan was gone. I was like, Gazan's great.
He had all the best lines at the end of the season. Number three, Azula. She seems out of place in this list, but, you know, there you go.
She's not even here.
What even is this list?
You missed it, so I can't go back.
I'm trying to see what Azula and...
Kazan have in common. Kazan having Number two, Vatu. Incredibly lovable.
Okay, villains, right?
Yeah. Well, it's villains ranked by lovableness.
How is Azula not number one?
No, because I love Zhao more than Azula. There you go.
Oh my god.
Vatu is the greatest. And Zhao is number one.
I love Vatu more than Azula.
Zhao is the villain to end all villains, the greatest person in the history of the universe.
I literally don't understand your...
You missed the criteria. It wasn't best villains.
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like we should just sit here and just think about Dylan for a second and think about
all
of his life and wonder.
That was the password on chat for a while.
Nope. Shh.
It's not like Dylan's life.
No, you're spoiler. Okay.
It's not the password anymore.
No, it is the password. Okay, never mind.
Well, I don't even know what
I think it is. Delaney, so top five people you would date.
Okay, so this isn't the same as my favorite characters, because I wouldn't date Janora. That's weird. She's like younger than me. All right. So, top five characters that I would date. Number five, Sue. I would date Sue. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, there are no guys on this list, which is, I thought about it for a minute, and I was like, because I don't like any of the guys, Korra. So, girls
there aren't
only.
Staple gents in Korra.
They really aren't. I mean, I almost put Tenzin on the list, because when Tenzin takes his shirt off, ooh, swoon, but no, Tenzin's honorable mention, there we go.
He's adorable.
Five, Sue. Four, Kuvira. Yes.
Would you date her, though?
We didn't break up.
I would date Kuvira. I would date both.
It'd be so good.
I'm not gonna take her out to dinner.
No, I would take Kuvira out to
let's be clear about this. She'd be taking you out.
This is true.
Whatever we do, Kuvira would be in charge.
She'd
be at
the dinner and then beat me up later.
I'd be okay with that. We could have a date where she just steps on my face. It'd be fine. Like, I'm totally okay with that.
That's 100% what the first date will be. I just want you to be prepared for that.
I am prepared. Okay. Number three, Korra.
I mean, Oz.
She would be the dorkiest person out on this
game. Book one, I was like, no, I wouldn't even be friends with Korra. Now I'm like, I would date Korra in a heartbeat. Yes. Would date Korra. Yes.
That cute hair, though.
I can't even talk about how adorable. And her book four outfit is like my favorite. Her on the face of the earth, like she's so like oh,
it's like and a combination hair. Of her three other outfits.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Okay. Two Asami, I would
of course,
I would date Asami.
And then number one,
Lynn, I would date.
I don't know why.
Really, Lynn?
I don't know what I was.
What a surprise!
Apparently, she like destroyed Air Temple Island when Tenzin broke up with her.
I don't know if she's
wouldn't break up with Lynn.
She doesn't seem like a people person.
Nope.
Number one, Opal for me. Obvious, yes.
I don't know. I'd date everybody.
Everyone. I mean, Opal or Asami. There you go.
I'd date Opal.
I mean, she's the cutest. So.
She is. That is accurate.
Did I miss any lists? I think we went through them all.
Whatever is your life, Dylan. You're the one who has an unhealthy obsession
with Zhao. With lists, it's true.
Also an unhealthy obsession with Zhao. Also
with Zhao, yeah. Can we talk about Zhao more? Top five, no, Zhao, top five Zhao moments. No, I don't have
number one, right. Fog of Lost Souls.
No, that's not I'm the Moon Slayer. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Or Zhao from, Zhao from The Last Airbender.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, like, what, stop, no,
he
says,
like,
no.
Like, we will become the gods or something.
Yeah, no. He's like, we are now the gods.
Stop, no.
Because that was the title of a please. Song on the soundtrack.
That was a really solid.
That was the most accurate characterization of any of the characters in Avatar was Zhao. And that
today,
was
we will let Prince Zuko wear the uniform
make
like
it go
a child.
Away. Make it go away. Stop, stop. Why are you doing this?
Most accurate
go
characterization.
Okay, there you go. Those are our many lists.
I clearly had lots of fun.
Next on From the Spirit World, more lists when we rank all the episodes.
The biggest lists with
to
tears.
To be continued. Anyway.
Can you tell me when we're doing that?
Nope. We'll figure it out, though. I'll schedule it.
I would like.
I need to schedule it around you guys, okay? So we'll figure it out.
I have a job.
I'm aware that's why I'll schedule it around everyone.
I also need time to make the list.
Make your list. Okay. Start now because it's going to be next weekend probably.
Let me tell you, making these lists takes a really long time.
I have
it takes a long time. Okay.
It takes a longer time
and
than you think.
What is the best episode of Korra? Will be debated extensively. Okay. I've been your main host, Dylan Kosa. I've been Delaney Mel Sam. Contributions from Teresa. Technical directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff.
And
musical credits. And Tidal. Hashtag TyCat. Musical credits, the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp, Logan Wagner by Kevin, Dumb Things and by Jake, special contributor Gareth, contributors Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie, G Millionaire, Sierra, Miss, Nick and Knight, Rudy, Tabuti, Quinn, Fetchin, Opal, Iroh, Jane, Nora, domgufang.net/podcast, domgufang.net/forums, domgufang.tumblr.com, twitter.com/domgufang, and you can find me on Tumblr at dylanftsw.tumblr.com. And give us reviews on iTunes. We're going
to
continue.
Why do you tell people to do that? Stop doing that.
I mean, he's very obsessed with our rating.
We've gotten like 20 positive reviews in a row.
Yeah,
great.
But only because you tell them to, and then but they're
he's
like,
been asking people to do it for like 3 years now,
and they finally started doing it. Yeah, it's true.
No, it's not.
And
it's funny
because
the first, when he first asked people to do it back when Korra started, he's like, hey, can you give us positive reviews? The very first new review that we got was like 1 star.
Yeah, it was 1 star. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, because people don't like us.
I know. I'm sad. Anyway, we have a few more regular podcasts. I mean, obviously, Korra's over. Next week, hopefully, episode rankings. We also have some other ones we'll see. We obviously have to talk about the Rift. And other than that, right. There's a few others which I'd like to get to, but we'll see. So, I don't know. That was it. What are we going to end on?
My feet.
I am the Moon Slayer.
No, nothing with Zhao.
I mean, hand makeout. Hashtag hand makeout.
Hashtag
hand makeout.
Yeah. Listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I have such a huge impact on everything that
you
happens.
Do. You do. Hand makeout, it's the defining part.
It's the new hashtag.
Anyway.
No, everybody shut up.
Okay, there you go.
I'm not great.
Thank you, are great. But anyway, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, hand makeout.
And make out hashtag.
I'm the Moon Slayer.
I'm the Moon Slayer.
We're not the gods.